It's 5:20, and this is the KDLL Evening News for Monday, December 15th, on 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna, listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. I'm Ashlyn O'Hara. Thanks for tuning in. Coming up, a new state report shows racial disparities in Alaska's COVID-19 deaths. But first, operations will resume at a long-dormant Sterling gravel pit, which will supply materials for planned safety improvements to the Sterling Highway. That's after Kenai Peninsula Borough Planning Commissioners approved the property owner's permit last week, with conditions. The approval came over the protests of more than a dozen neighboring residents who said reviving pit operations would create noise and air pollution, hurt property values, and disrupt the area's livability. And the property owner, QAP, says they're aware of the community's concerns. Spencer Newens is a project manager with the company and presented the permit application.
We think you'll find our application complete and thorough. We recognize there are impacts from construction to the surrounding community. We hope you understand that these are temporary and serve the purpose of improving our communities.
Materials taken from the site will be used to widen the Sterling Highway between Sterling and Soldotna. That stretch of road is recognized by the State Transportation Department as having higher than normal rates of serious traffic accidents, driven in part by busy summer traffic patterns. QAP is not new to Sterling. The company has owned and paid taxes on the roughly 30-acre parcel off Robinson Loop Road for decades. It existed before the borough began regulating gravel pits in the 1990s, but commissioners deemed it inactive after 5 years of dormancy. Under changes to the Kenai Peninsula Borough's material site code, that means the company needs to get a new permit to start work back up. Borough Planning Director Robert Ruffner says the public review process for QAP's application is more robust than it would have been prior to the code overhaul.
Prior to just a couple of years ago, I think it's really important for the public to remember that a prior existing use, they didn't have any rules at all. I mean, there wouldn't have been a public hearing. There wouldn't have been any discussion about buffers. There wouldn't have been any discussion about going into the groundwater. It just would have happened.
The new permit is good for 5 years, but Newen says they estimate there's only enough gravel left in the pit to keep crews busy for 2 construction seasons. He says the company won't process any material on the property, meaning no rock crushing or asphalt production. And the company plans to leave a 30-foot buffer between the deepest extraction point and the top of the groundwater table. Still, planning commissioners were inundated with public testimony opposed to the pit. Don Dothit has lived next to the gravel pit for 40 years. The last time the pit was operational, he says the activity shook his house and clouded his well water. Now at retirement age, he'd hoped to sell his home, but he's worried the pit will lower the value of his property.
Yes, I understand they need to make money off this pit, but they've already made money off this pit. They have made their investment back in spades from the previous excavation.
Donald Scott Vermilia has similar concerns. The land owned by QAP and his residents share a property line.
I know what happens when excavators, bulldozers, and big trunk dump trucks are backing up. And hearing that damn beep, beep, beep is going to be more than enough aggravation. And hearing it 24 hours a day in the midst of summer when my family comes up here to vacation.
QAP says its operations are dictated by when the Highway Safety Project crews are working. That will mostly be at night to avoid disrupting daytime traffic, necessitating nighttime gravel hauls to and from the site. But Commissioner Jeffrey Epperheimer says allowing crews to work day and night is too disruptive.
I honestly think I can say that this will be harmful to the welfare of those around the pit.
Commissioners voted 8-1 to approve QAP's permit after some amendments to address those concerns. They included barring nighttime operations, increasing the minimum berm height around the property, and requiring noise mitigation efforts. QAP will also have to go through another public hearing if it wants to renew its permit again in 5 years. Commissioner Karina England was one of the votes in favor.
It's obvious that there's a lot of strong feelings that are shared here, and I do respect that. I just kind of wanted to reiterate our role in this and how it's to evaluate this application based on the standards in borough code, and that from the record before us, including the staff findings, the technical documents, and the proposed conditions, I feel that the applicant has met those standards.
Commission approval kicked off a 15-day window to appeal the decision. But the borough said Monday no appeals have been filed. And finally, a new report from the State Health Department reviews the COVID-19 pandemic in Alaska, looking back at the spread of the virus, the state's response, the efficacy of vaccines, and gaps in pandemic preparedness. As KUAC's Patrick Gilchrist reports, it also documents significant racial disparities in key public health metrics.
About 1 in 500 Alaskans died of COVID-19 between 2020 and 2023. That's according to an epidemiology bulletin the State Department of Health released on December 9th. And the 33-page document says there were substantial racial disparities in rates of COVID-19 hospitalization and mortality in Alaska. Early in the pandemic, for instance, age-adjusted mortality rates in the state were about 3.5 times higher for Asian and Pacific Islander people compared to white people, according to the bulletin. The disparity during that period, from June 2020 to January 2021, was greatest among American Indian and Alaska Native people, whose age-adjusted mortality rate was 5.5 times higher than that of white people.
It matters because at the end of the day, what we would like to get to is that there are no disparities based on race.
Jacqueline Bergstrom is the executive director of health services for Tanana Chiefs Conference. That's a nonprofit tribal organization based in Fairbanks that aims to advance the health and social service needs of its 42 members, 37 of which are federally recognized tribes. Bergstrom read the state bulletin and said the results didn't come as a surprise, since officials were also tracking data during the pandemic. Other studies have also observed similar disparities nationally. But she says the report's comprehensive look back at COVID-19 in Alaska makes it a useful resource.
Because when we were in it, right? And we were tracking real time.
The magnitude of the racial disparities for hospitalization and mortality rates in Alaska fluctuated in the different phases of COVID-19 analyzed in the bulletin. But it says the disproportionate impacts, quote, continued for the entirety of the pandemic in Alaska, end quote. The bulletin concluded by saying more research is needed to grasp the underlying social and structural issues. Bergstrom also says the causes behind the disparities are numerous and complex. But she says limited access to running water in some parts of Alaska is one example. That impacts people's ability to take preventative measures like hand washing. According to the State Division of Water, more than 3,300 homes in Alaska don't have modern plumbing. And a study during the pandemic linked limited water resources with increased risk for COVID-19 in Alaska villages. Bergstrom says the new report offers more evidence that improving those resources would be a boon to public health.
Just seeing this data, it's another really important factor where we can show and say, hey, we need to get water and sanitation to our rural communities. Because we've seen some of the impacts during the COVID-19 pandemic as well.
Through a Department of Health spokesperson, the state section of epidemiology declined an interview request about the bulletin. In an email, health officials wrote that COVID-19 amplified pre-existing inequities and that contributing factors likely include housing conditions, limited access to timely or specialty health care, and higher prevalence of underlying medical conditions associated with severe COVID-19. In Fairbanks, I'm Patrick Gilchrist.
And that'll be all for tonight's KDLL Evening News. We had help from Patrick Gilchrist in Fairbanks. You can re-listen to this newscast and find our other stories online at kdll.org. I'm Ashlyn O'Hara. Have a great night.